Did you know that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day? But don't take my word for it. Actually, you should take my word for it. And here's what you need to do. You need to go to ZipRecruiter.com/Zach. That's www.ZipRecruiter.com/Zach to learn more there about recruiting the best people for your business. The fastest, best people fast. You know that fast, good, cheap pyramid? Well, this is doing it all. This is fast, good, and yeah, you got to check out the pricing online. That's kind of above my pay grade, but ZipRecruiter, check it out. Too many ads. Here we go.
The Zach Kuhn Show.
This is fun. We actually met very briefly at a Billboard Awards. I think it was a Billboard Awards conference. I was still in college.
Did you go to Syracuse?
I did not go to Syracuse. I went to Berkeley.
Oh, okay.
And I think you were doing some kind of mentor thing at like a round table.
Yes.
And I was like a kid sitting at that table with like, I don't know, 20 other students. I remember this. You definitely don't remember me, which is cool. There's no way you would.
I did that twice or two or three times. So for sure. I met a ton of Berkeley people and a ton of Syracuse people.
100%, 100%. So here we are again. Full circle.
Okay, well, I hope I wasn't too much of a dick.
You were a huge dick. I was questioning doing this. No, I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. No, it was amazing. I was looking because I was like in college and I was like, I think I was a senior or I might have been a junior. And I remember it was with you. And then I was at another table with an agent from APA. And it like got me super pumped about going into the industry. I was like, and then I got into the industry. And I realized it was horrible. It was totally misleading. But no, I'm kidding.
Some days.
So how, I'm just going to dive right in because why not?
Yeah.
How does the Aerosmith scratch off ticket idea come together? This is like my favorite story. Aerosmith's my first concert, probably my favorite band. How does this idea come together?
That's one of my favorites for sure. And certainly, you know, one of the kind of defining moments in primary wave proof of concepts in terms of what we do and why we really believe we are different than any other publisher, because no other publisher
does that.
Zach, would have come up with this. So basically, when I was before I got to primary wave, when I was at, I was actually, I ran marketing at Virgin Records for a little bit, and during that time, I kept seeing on TV these advertisements for these big movie openings in conjunction with some sort of scratch-off lottery card. And it always kind of struck me as weird that the music industry had never kind of done something similar. So fast forward a little bit. On that primary wave, we have, you know, the amazing Steven Tyler catalog, and we were putting together our kind of deck of ideas, which I'll get into a little bit with you later. But I said to everyone, you know, I've always wanted to do a music industry-based scratch-off lottery card. Here we're sitting with Dream On. It just seems too perfect for me. And I said to the team, I'm like, we need to find how to get to, you know, a major lottery company, because there should be a Dream On scratch off lottery card.
It's a no-brainer.
No-brainer.
It has to exist.
Yeah. And by the way, in the beginning, I was only thinking Massachusetts, because the band obviously from Boston.
And they said you were crazy. They said, what are you talking about? It's got to be everywhere.
Yes. We literally, this is like part, it's funny that you bring this up and start with this, because it's Primary Wave's 15-year anniversary this year. So it's really like this moment of like classic entrepreneurship, like Larry Mistel, the head of the company, me, the head of marketing, Seth Faber, like four of us literally piled into a car and drove up to Providence, Rhode Island. And met with this company, G-Tech.
And is it easy to get the meeting because you're representing Aerosmith? Or did you kind of have to hustle the meeting a little bit?
No, totally. No, we did have to hustle. I mean, Seth found this company, GTEC, and made a great connection there. And they were intrigued for sure, but nobody had ever pitched them from a music standpoint. So, like I said, piled in a car, drove up to Providence, did this whole presentation. And yeah, to what you were saying, they're like, you guys are crazy. You're thinking way too small. This is much bigger than just the state of Massachusetts. And yeah, it ended up running in like 11 states. And, you know, on the publishing side, it was phenomenal because Dream On was utilized in both TV commercials and the radio spots. And it was great. It was really
good. How do you look at each idea? And there are so many fun ideas that you guys have done. I'd love to talk about a couple of them, but how do you look to see, was that a success afterwards? For this one, you've got the sync placements. I guess there was direct revenue flow. Are you looking at other metrics? Do you see spikes in concert sales for Aerosmith in those 11 markets? Like, how do you look at the data afterwards?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And it's certainly a bit easier today as opposed to, you know, gosh, that was probably like 12 years ago. Just because now you can really look at like streaming data and look at the Shazam numbers.
Right. You can really see it broken by city and you can get into it.
Yeah. Then back then, you know, as part of the overall deal, we got Aerosmith. Gosh, I can't believe I can't remember the name of the album. They had a new album coming out. We got GTEC to pay for all these bus benches and billboards to support the new album. So, you know, there was definitely incremental sales spikes and downloads back then for the new album. But it wasn't as easy to really monitor the success, but just the pure fact that, you know, we were getting
people
happening in these states, you know, telling us about hearing it and playing the game and holding the cards. Yeah.
It's the coolest partnership ever. So how do you oversee the publishing roster, and then I guess the artist roster also, in the sense of, is it just like mayhem, everyone come up with ideas, go? Or do you go, okay, we did this crazy thing with Aerosmith, I guess it was a different time in the company back then, but let's just say, okay, we just did a great deal with Aerosmith, now let's move to this next artist, what can we do here? Okay, we did something here, do we go to the next artist? How do you organize it? Because it's got to get overwhelming, right? How do you think about splitting the team up and dividing and conquering?
Yeah, no, it's controlled mayhem. You know, we as Primary Wave has grown and as we've partnered and acquired more catalogs, we've obviously adapted along with that, right? So, you know, it's not a set formula, like every 1,000 new songs we hire another person, but we're very, very mindful of that. And yeah, give or take. But it's, we spend on purpose, we spend, you know, each week in our various meetings broken up into the roster. So, you know, tomorrow's meeting, we'll talk about Air Supply and Devo and literally spend an hour and a half going over, okay, what crazy ideas do we have? What low-hanging fruit ideas do we have? How is the digital campaign around it? You know, because we've got this massive digital marketing team and a massive brand marketing team. So it's not just throwing everything against the wall. There is a method to the madness, and it's not as daunting as it sounds to manage the process, as you know, as long as we've got the people on the team executing.
Right. Okay. So I have to ask, I mean, I have so much I want to talk about, but I have to ask, how do you, you're like the king of getting holidays for people. And since you brought up Devo and you've done this for Smokey Robinson, and wasn't this done like a dare? Like, didn't someone basically say you'll never be able to pull that off? And you said, I'm going to show you wrong. How do you do this? How do you get a holiday for someone? I want my own holiday. Can I pull this off?
Well, we have to find something that, you know, you're putting me on the
spot. That's worthwhile for.
I'm trying to think of your name and like trying to, you know, sound it out with a month, like, you know, Coon Ember or something, but
could we do that?
So yes, when we sit down with any artist, we put together, you know, for lack of a better word, a marketing deck, and I'm using my fingers in quotations, because it's a deck, 25, 30 pages. It's got, as I said before, crazy ideas, easily attainable ideas, the whole gamut. But the team and I do our research and we know, okay, we're going into this meeting with Smokey Robinson and we really do a major deep dive, whiteboard brainstorming, everything you'd expect. And then we sit down with the artist and we present. And it's tough because we do this in two phases. One, we do it before we get the deal.
I was going to ask. So your team has to do all this work and you might not even get the deal, but that's the big selling point, Primary Wave. So you have to present the real action steps that you're going to take with the catalog. What are some ideas here?
Correct. And, keep in mind, we have to take some liberty, right? So, a legend like Smokey, I've done this for so long, but inside I'm still, my heart's pounding and I'm sweating, like, is Smokey Robinson? And we tell all these artists, guys, girls, like we have very thick skin. If you hate something, look us in the eye, tell us to F off, tell us I hate this. And then we obviously fine tune the deck. And when we actually have the deal done, then we've got the real ideas that we're really going to go after, right? So, yes, I'm sorry I'm rambling, but...
No, I love this insight because this is what I'm wondering. I'm wondering how this all comes together. Okay, so you come up with this idea for a holiday for some artists.
So specifically again on Smokey. We sit down with Smokey. It's like, probably like the fourth or fifth idea in there. We get to it. Smokey literally looks at us and looked at me and said, Adam, there's no way you're getting me a holiday. And in the deck, it was, we are going to create National Father-Daughter Day based on Smokey Robinson and his song, My Girl, right? What better song to represent the relationship between a father and a daughter? He's like, there's no way you guys are going to be able to do this. I don't believe it. Anyway, he was being very nice and, smiling, but he's like, there's just no way. And yeah, man, like you said before, we're like, all right, Smokey, challenge accepted. And, again, one of my team, reached out and had conversations with a number of the major greeting card companies, and American Greetings thought it was absolutely brilliant. And then and forevermore, the second Sunday in October is Smokey Robinson's National Father-Daughter Day.
So is all you need to have the cards lined up? Does that create the holiday, or do you do it?
No, you need.
What's the minimum thing that you need to have a holiday?
We got it, officially stamped or officially named through, I think it's called the Chase Book of National Holidays. Anybody,
the thing, whatever the thing is.
The thing is the Bible of Holidays.
It's in there. The second Sunday of every October, right? Yes. Is this holiday? Do you celebrate this yourself with this?
I have a daughter. When I was going through it, it was, I was like, this is perfect for my daughter and I. So yes, of course.
So is this, so do you now put this into your like book of tricks every time an artist comes? Can this artist have a holiday? Cause we did this again with Devo. So is this like something that is always in the back of your mind? Is there an opportunity here for an artist to have a holiday?
Truth be told, no. I mean, we don't like to really repeat our bag of tricks. Sometimes if it's so on the nose and makes sense, then yeah, of course. But we can't go promising holidays to everybody.
You've heard it here. If you sign with Primary Wave for everything, you're not guaranteed a holiday. Don't expect it. It's not going to happen. But do you go on like if I was coming up with these ideas, like I feel like I'd be going on like long walks and I would be, I don't know. Do you like morning pages like Julia Cameron of the Artist Way? She's always, how are you coming up with all of these creative ideas? Do you have a method for it? Or do you just hang around in a conference room and just brainstorm for hours?
So typically, well, especially with the pandemic, I walk I go for a walk every single morning for an hour and a half. So that's now. But in the past, usually on my, there's always been some sort of commute for me. So it's during that time, whether I was driving or taking bus, train, whatever, that's where I would really kind of, go into it in my head. And yeah, I always like to go into all of our brainstorming meetings with a list of at least a few ideas. So there's the thought starter process and, not relying on everyone. I do like to begin each meeting with, okay, guys, look at these four or five. What do you think? Can we make it happen? And then it starts the dialogue going from there.
Okay, fair enough. And then how big, like what crazy ideas have not been able to have been accomplished? Are there any we can talk about? Like how big do we go and who shoots it down?
That's a great question. Nobody's ever asked that, surprisingly. I'm just trying to remember if it was in the Steven Tyler deck or was it in the Smokey deck? The biggest idea that it wasn't shot down, it just hasn't been able to happen, is I wanted, again, I can't remember if it was Aerosmith or Smokey, but I wanted Primary Wave to be the first company to have their artist perform at the halftime show on Thanksgiving at all three games. Okay, it's never happened before. No. So this came to me one day. So you start, and I'm like, okay, you start in Detroit and you're getting from Detroit to Dallas, because always Detroit and Dallas are the right first two home games, right? But it's the third one that kind of screws everything up. Because, okay, Detroit, you can get to Dallas, that should be okay. But, if it's in New England, can they get from Dallas to New England?
It's tough.
Right. So it got to a point where we did have a conversation with the NFL and they were like, we just can't take that chance that mother nature, prevents that from happening. But I thought that was just like,
so that's why it would be so amazing though, if you pulled it off. I think it's worth the risk.
I know.
We've got to, how do we do this? Can we try to make this happen again? Or what do you think? Is the door closed on the trifecta, on the turkey? It's a turkey for a turkey. I mean, come on. It's the it's the turkey game. I think this is brilliant. We've got to make this happen.
Somebody is going to end up stealing it and making it happen.
Shoot, we'll cut it out of the podcast. Someone's going to take it. So, okay. So going back for a second, you started out in the industry, if I have this right, at Chrysalis Records as a marketing coordinator, right? Or so how do you get the gig at Chrysalis? How'd you break into the industry?
I interned a couple of years, my last 2 years I went to Ithaca College. My last two summers, I interned at Atlantic Records. And then when I graduated, I had a friend who worked at Chrysalis, and I wanted to, my band to succeed. I was a singer in a band, and I thought we were going to be famous, and I was going to be a famous rock star, and all this magical stuff was going to happen. And my friend at Chrysalis said, hey, we could use some kind of like intern help, even though I graduated, and I was waiting tables and bartending. And I said, sure, let me have a foot in reality just in case the whole music thing goes awry. So I started as an intern at Chrysalis, and then 3 months later, I guess I was so good, they offered me a job as an assistant in the marketing department. And really, as they say, the rest is history.
So how did you know? Because if you follow your career, you were at Chrysalis, and then you were at Virgin, and then you were at Arista, or I may have this backwards, and then Island Def Jam. How did you know it was time to switch labels, or what happened each time? Did an opportunity come? Did you find another position? How did you know it was time to move to the next gig?
Yep. There were various reasons for each of the move. I went from Chrysalis, got taken over by EMI and SBK right back in those days. So literally in the middle of 1997, not sorry to bore you, but EMI shut down, like everyone from the head of the company to the lowest paid assistant, literally got shut down. And so that forced me to have to go look for another gig at that point. So I ended up going from Chrysalis to Arista. And then I was at Arista for a while. It was amazing, like best time, one of the best times of my lives. I was working for Clive Davis, and then Clive got let go, and then L.A. Reid came in with Larry Mistel, and that's how I met Larry. And then Larry went to Virgin, and he asked me to come with him to be the SVP of marketing. So I went
and there. This was kind of a crazy time at Virgin Records, right? Because when you guys start, Did the whole roster kind of fall apart, starting with sort of like the Janet Jackson moment? Like, what was happening at Virgin at the time? It was kind of a crazy moment, right?
Yes, it was it was a crazy time, and it was definitely a major shock to the system coming from Arista, where literally we had just, I was the marketing person for Avril Lavigne, Pink, Dido, Sarah McLachlan. We had Usher. We had Outkast. Right. It was stupid. It was crazy. And then all of a sudden, I'm thrown into Virgin Records, and Janet Jackson just had the whole. We got there right after the whole Super Bowl
that happened. Right
thing. So MTV would not play any Virgin videos because of that. They took it out on Virgin, and Larry and I.
Isn't that the most frustrating thing? And then what, didn't like the Rolling Stones, like, cause didn't Virgin just sign the Rolling Stones, if I have this correct?
Yeah. Right around that time. Yes.
And they're totally, everyone's blacklisted from MTV. Isn't that crazy that happened? Like, it's like unfair, isn't it?
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. And it just was a very, very tough, you know, year and a half or so. But, you know, again, you have to learn from everything. And I made new relationships there, and things can't always be great. And, you know, my loyalty to Larry was, you know, the reason I went over there.
And when he goes, oh yeah, yeah.
No, go ahead.
I was just, so what he goes and he, and there's a great story about how we raised $60 million, which might be my favorite raised story on the planet. And then when that happens, does he just bring you with him right away? Is that how you end up with Larry and Primary Wave?
I had about a year gap, because as Larry was doing this, pulling off this miraculous raise, and that is true. You're right. And
we've got to tell the highlight of the story, which is he's trying to get money from everyone. Nobody's giving him money. He goes into a final meeting. He walks out of the meeting. He leaves the books in the meeting. The next meeting comes in, picks up the books, and they decide to invest. Is that the story? Is that the shortest version ever of this story?
By the way, you're hired. But yes, and yes, it still sounds absolutely insane coming out of someone else's mouth. I mean, really, but that is the truth.
Were you there? I know you said there was a year break, but were you following this story along? Like, this is like the craziest, this is the best story ever.
I was following it because Larry and I, like, literally, I mean, every other day, Larry was emailing me or texting me saying, dude, you have to come join me. You have to come join me. Right. You're missing out on some of this stuff, which is amazing. And I, you know, look, at that point, you know, be quite honest, my ego got the best of me. And simultaneously, Island Def Jam had reached out to me to come over there, leave Virgin, go over there and be the senior vice president of marketing. And, you know, at that time in my career, I thought, holy crap, you know, this is, you know, really the big time.
Yeah, right.
And again, Larry and I could not have been more honest with him and transparent and literally showing him financially how I needed to do this for my family. And because, you know, starting Primary Wave, it was purely
very risky.
It was risky. It was entrepreneurship. It was, you know, pull up the bootstraps and all, and every cliche you could think of. And, I'm like, Larry, I just can't, I'm dying to, and then literally I'm watching every freaking day, and there were great people at Island Def Jam and amazing bands. Killers were on top, and Fall Out Boy, and I'm sitting in marketing meetings with Jay-Z, because he was one of the executives, and Rihanna and Bon Jovi, and but then I'll get I'll get a call at night going, hey, we just met with Courtney Love. We're buying Kurt Cobain's catalog, and I'm like, excuse me, so. My time at Island Def Jam did not last very long because I had to get out and go to Primary Wave. I had to do it.
Does Larry always say, I feel like every interview I hear with him, he always says it's better to be lucky than good. Is this like his catchphrase? Is he always saying this? And what I'm curious is, he says it like it's real advice. And what I want to know is, like, how do you take that to heart? Like, how do you manufacture the luck? Like, how do you think about this?
I love these questions. He says it all the time. Yes.
He says all the time, right? That's his line.
Yes. That is his line. And I think we've all adopted it.
What does that mean? How do you put that into your life? How can you be lucky? I mean, how does it work?
Well, it's not that how you can be lucky. It's just that it's better to be lucky.
It's better to be lucky than
to be good, right? So, you could be great. You could be, but everything you do, you need kind of a little luck to pop in there, right? To really, again, as brilliant as anybody is, as creative as anybody is, whatever you believe in out there in the universe, a little bit of luck had to be kind of tossed on top to make that success. So
fair enough. Yeah. Okay, so the Nirvana catalog gets purchased. And were you part of the team that came up with his lyrics on the side of the shoes? Was that you, or was that before your time?
That was right before my time. That was Justin Shewcat, one of the founding members. And I mean, Justin was another reason why I had to be a Primary Wave. I mean, again, Larry and I were friends. He was one of my mentors. Justin Shewcat is over there. He was literally my assistant at Arista Records. Like, we all knew each other. We all genuinely liked each other. And that just added to the reasoning for me to go over there. But yes, so Justin came up with the idea for the Cobain Converse, which is freaking, again, that and the Aerosmith scratch-off tickets.
You're off with a bang. Primary Wave is off with a bang.
Go to any meeting and okay, has your publisher ever even approached you with this concept, let alone execute it? No, I don't think so. So, yes, Justin was, that was a great freaking idea.
Do you see other publishers today? And I guess Hypnosis might be on this track, although maybe it's still too early, but it's been 15 years of just incredibly innovative ideas, brilliant concepts. Have you seen other publishers kind of try to take this approach? Because it feels like there's no one else, even the smaller companies or whatever, like it doesn't feel like there's that many people that are that innovative in the publishing space.
You know, yeah, I mean, the short answer is,
minimal.
I know. I mean, I again, I'm not trying to be arrogant or.
But I think it's kind of a fact, or I just don't see anyone doing it.
Zach, it's a 100% fact. And again, yes, we don't know if Hypnosis is going to start, adopting some of the things that we've been successful at or not. But no, the majors for sure. I don't know if they never tried, or they tried and it just didn't work, or the number of copyrights are just too insane to really dedicate the proper amount of marketing behind it. Or in some cases, I'm sure, and I mean, they've been so good at it, but just like their amount of real estate is so great that the calls come in for great songs. So why did they have to spend money to make some more money?
Right. It's already flowing. How are you thinking now with targeting, legendary artists to, let's say, Gen Z? There was obviously the big moment with Ocean Spray and Fleetwood Mac. Is this something that you're thinking about now? How do we, reach this new generation that's super digital? We've got these legendary, iconic artists. How do we get them in front of kids so that their legacy can sustain? How do you think about this right now?
Yeah, no, that's something we think about all the time, because that is, part of our pitch when we initially sit down with these artists. And, you know, we don't say it flippantly. We really pride ourselves on coming up with ideas and concepts to get to Gen Z. So, you know, yes, the Dreams thing, man, I don't even know what to say about that. But I'll
was
take
that planned? Did anyone plan that, or was that totally random? The guys on the skateboard with the song.
Again, Larry says it's better to be lucky
it's
than
better to be lucky than it is to be good. Yes.
I mean, that's the perfect example of that. But I will say that for someone like Paul Anka, and I don't know how much of your audience is familiar with Paul Anka, but you're talking about, you know, an icon who's about to turn 80 years old. He wrote, you know, he wrote the lyrics to My Way, Frank Sinatra's My Way. He wrote, you know, wrote for Tom Jones. And I mean, he's just massive. He wrote Put Your Head on My Shoulders, just massive, massive hits. And a normal person would say, okay, you're not going to get, you know, similar to Smokey saying to us about the holiday, you're not going to get Paul Anka trending on TikTok. It's just not going to happen. And our digital team is so good. And we went out, and when we first saw that Doja Cat had used a piece of Put Your Head on My Shoulder as a bed to one of her songs, Justin immediately went to Doja Cat's management. Our digital team immediately starts a whole TikTok campaign, you know, utilizing
Put Your Head on My
Shoulder. And it just, it grew and grew and grew, and it ended up being so big. Again, Paul Anka trending on TikTok. I would bet almost anything that he's the oldest
person to trend on TikTok.
Yeah, I really do think that. And it's shown. He now has, and we'll certainly see this once the touring opens back up. But he would say to you right now, I get stopped on the street by 15 and 14 year olds, and they sing Put Your Head on My Shoulders to me. And he is just, you know, floating on air from that. And he really expects, as do we, once touring opens back up, you're going to see 15 year olds there with their moms or the grandparents or whatever. So it'll be very, very interesting to watch this. But again, that was all the power of Primary Wave.
The power of Primary Wave. Don't bet against it. What happens when the Dreams thing takes off? Does your team start internalizing, saying, okay, we're in the middle of a moment here. How do we capitalize on this? Like, didn't some of the members of the band then get on TikTok? And did you think, how do we accelerate this? Or with things like that, is it even possible to do anything? Or is the fire so big that it's like, you know, it's already taking off?
Yeah, no, that is a tougher one to really try to amplify, because it got so big so quickly. As you said, the band members actually jumped on it and you know, magnified it, not or amplified it. So that's a little bit more difficult for us to really add anything of substance to the campaign without it starting to become very forced and very cheesy. And we really, really don't want to do things like that.
Right. How have you been thinking about, I'm assuming probably over the past couple of years, as more and more DSPs are opening up in international markets, how do you think about marketing in like China, Russia? Do you think about this where these are markets and cultures that we have less, that we're not as familiar with? And how do we come up with meaningful brand partnerships or marketing opportunities in these areas?
Yeah, we do. We've been spending a lot more time looking at what opportunities could exist. So, you know, as an example, we recently, in the last 2 months, brought on
Natalia.
And, you know, Larry and I have known her for years from her time over at the agency group in UTA, and she's fantastic. And, you know, she is speaking to various musicians and record company people in Russia and in China. And what we're looking to do at first is have the DJs over there in those territories who are successful already and already have a huge following and huge Spotify or whatever the DSP exists there,
right?
Numbers there, have them do new versions of our songs, right? So
it feels culturally accept, or what would the word be? It fits in with the culture.
It does. It does. And especially when we go, we really dive down and we look at somebody like an Air Supply, for example, who has, believe it or not, they're a tremendous following in the Philippines. So, you know, our A&R team, somebody of course has, you know, connection over there. Next thing we know, an artist from the Philippines is doing a version of an Air Supply song, and it takes on a whole new life. So we're constantly coming up with new ideas, new ways to reach. I mean, you know, this is such a huge world, obviously. So there's limitless opportunities.
Limitless opportunities. Are you focusing a lot of time right now on in-person marketing, experiential marketing, as the world's starting to open back up? Is there, as festivals are starting to happen, is this becoming the new thing for the next 6 months or a year that everyone's going to be focusing on?
You know, man, your questions are good. Everything for us has to somehow affect the earnings of the song.
Of the publishing or, right? Or the masters, if you have them, or whatever it is.
Correct. So it takes a while to get in the right mindset, especially when we bring new people in and they're like, let's have this person on the Thanksgiving Day parade. That doesn't really, you know, maybe streaming will increase a little, but how does it really truly affect the earnings? So yes, the short answer is yes to your question, but we have to look at it more along the lines of, okay, we have Whitney Houston, right? We own 50% of the Whitney Houston estate. We've been doing a tremendous job. What is there in the experiential space with an artist who isn't living? So yeah, we're working on right now a significant mobile installation, for lack of a better word, right? Something similar to what the Rolling Stones have done and David Bowie has done, but for Whitney, and obviously music will drive the entire program. And this will be something that we will look to start in New York, but branch out into multiple cities. So from that aspect, that's how we're looking at the experiential side, where we are producing and creating, along with this company, Five Currents, a whole Bob Marley immersive project based in Las Vegas. And we're on track right now to open sometime in 2022. So things like that's how we need to think. The music needs to drive everything. We need to be able to affect the earnings of the music.
Right. And you've got to think, like, the brilliance of the Aerosmith deal was that if it did nothing else, you got the money from the sink. With the Kurt Cobain deal, the lyrics were on the shoes, which I think was carefully thought out, because by having the lyrics on the shoes, you were able to cash in with each shoe. So it's how can each deal actually directly contribute funds?
Exactly. To
the catalog, right? That's the...
Yep.
Josh Rothstein tells me you are the king of puns. Is this true? How often are you slipping in puns into the conversation here, Adam?
Now you put me on the spot because I'm not going to be able to come up with anything, but yeah, well, yes, some would say puns. Some would say bad dad jokes. There's a very, very fine line.
Fine line between the pun and a bad dad joke. It's almost, you know, it's almost unnoticeable.
Yes. But I do like to slip that in and make people laugh. And sometimes they... You know what? It started with talking about, before you asked me about ideas that we haven't been able to achieve. There is another one, and that is, and this does go in most decks. I'm being honest here. It's for the first time revealing this. Ben and Jerry's ice cream flavor.
Yeah.
This has been something that literally, when I was at Island, I thought I was genius. I came up with this idea for Bon Jovi. I wanted to create an ice cream with Ben and Jerry called Bon Jovi. And it would be vanilla ice cream with little bonbons mixed into the vanilla ice cream. And I'm like, oh my God, this is great.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea.
I'm like, I'm running around like, I'm the best. I'm the best. And the manager is like, eh. And I'm like, really? So it never went anywhere, but I always kept this in the back of my mind. So talking about the puns, yes. So every time we do a deck,
there's an ice cream pitch.
What's the ice cream flavor? Okay, Melissa Etheridge, crumb to my window.
I think only two artists have ice cream flavors with Ben and Jerry's. It's Cherry Garcia and Fish Food. Are there any others?
I think there may be a couple of other. Oh, well, Bob Marley has.
Does he have a flavor? I guess
it's what do you call it? It's not cyclical. It's.
Is he? I feel like he is on the. On something.
This is before we obviously were involved with him, but yes, he has a recurring flavor, but it's not a constant flavor.
We need Adam to come in with a pun for it. Now Jenny's Ice Cream just did a Dolly Parton partnership. And they did a Dolly flavor.
Really?
Yeah. Jenny Bauer at Jenny's Ice Cream might be your way in here.
I have to make this happen. This is my
I'm a huge ice cream fan. I grew up in New York. We would go to the Ben & Jerry's factory when I was a kid. It's the best. I'm a massive Ben & Jerry's fan. And my brother actually in his childhood bedroom has every Ben & Jerry's flavor stacked up on his bookshelf. Like, he's obsessed with Ben & Jerry's. I think this is a great idea. It speaks very personally to me. I want to make it happen. I want to see you make it happen.
I'll cut you in, man. Anyhow.
Cut me in. Yeah, it was all my idea. How about the Alice Cooper hot sauces? How does that come together? Who makes those? Were you trying hot sauces or did you find them somewhere?
That was one of the deals that came in through Rob, who runs our digital team. He's kind of like our jack of all trades. And Jeff, who runs our branding team. That was really one of the hot sauce companies. Rob had reached out to them because we also represent Def Leppard. So we were, you know, looking for cool ideas with some of our rock bands. And again, it was one of these things that just made too much sense. Welcome to My Nightmare and Poison.
Yeah, so good.
So perfect. And yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to be coy, but you should be hearing in the next few months or so a real major outlay of the Alice Cooper hot sauce in major restaurants and major food chains. So we love it. Now, again, this is, I don't want to sound like I'm contradicting myself or being a hypocrite. There are things, there are concepts that are just too good, even if they're not going to throw off significant earnings on the publishing.
They're just clever and they're almost low relative to pulling off a holiday. A hot sauce brand is maybe a little bit easier compared to other things.
It is. And something like the hot sauce brand can obviously takes on a life of its own, gets Alice even more press, gets him spoken about, maybe makes a supervisor say, hey, I forgot about Alice Cooper, right? These all
works,
have
right.
long tail effects.
Or it all, I think, like, you know, by like Larry trying to raise the money, he got lucky. By putting out these hot sauces, you get lucky. By doing something else comes of it, or you never know what happens. And Shep Gordon says that Primary Wave is like the one publishing company that's ever provided value for Alice, right? Isn't that true?
He has said that. And he's, you know, an amazing partner. And I know he sees, again, I hate sounding like I'm beating a dead horse, but any publishing company is never, ever going to approach a Shep Gordon or any manager for that matter and say, we are going to create a line of hot sauces for your client. It just not in the mindset of any publisher. And I really, the one of the beautiful things is that the Shep Gordons and all of the managers realize that in the beginning, I could see it in some of their eyes, especially the newer managers, right? As we're having these conversations with them and the artist. And also we have a management division, right? So they're probably, this is, you know, this business, you know, can be shady at times, right? And
yeah, right.
I'm sure several of them have in their minds, are these guys going to try to take my client from me after we do this deal? And it's so not that at all. We really want to be a partner. We want to be Shep's, you know, AAA, you know, farm club, and let us do the dirty work. So I think throughout the years, you know, we've proven that that is really the case.
And that's kind of the price, like you guys prefer to only buy 50% of the catalog or whatever it is, as opposed to you guys, well, you prefer not to buy catalogs full out typically, right?
Correct. We prefer somewhere between 50 and 80 is the sweet spot. But yeah, we want the artists and the managers or the estates to be incentivized. And we're going to make the piece that they hold on to even that much more valuable by everything that we do. And we want to have this constant dialogue and back and forth. And, you know, nobody knows their catalogs better than the artists themselves, right? No matter how much of a geek I might be about, you know, Marley or Sun Records or whatever, I'm never going to really, really know it the way Sidella Marley knows it, or the way, you know.
Right.
We need them as part.
We need them in. What have we left out here, Adam? We've said so much. What's been left out? Ali and AJ's song come out this week, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. It was on New Music Friday. What's been unsaid? What have we left out here?
Gosh, on the management side, you know, we're Ali and AJ, we're extremely excited, you know, to be able to represent a band like them. They're just phenomenal. This new album is phenomenal. Josh Rothstein and our brand team are doing tons of things for them. And I really hope, you know, this time next year, I mean, they're going to be on the main stage of Lollapalooza. Whoever would have thought that Ali and AJ would have been on the main stage.
It's unbelievable.
So we're really, really proud of that. I mean, our management roster is really diverse and really cool. I mean, we've done amazing things with Melissa Etheridge, and we have Belle Biv DeVoe and Isley Brothers and Cypress Hill. It's a great balance, and it's great to have kind of the publishing side and the management side play off of each other. And, you know, we're all one big company. But it's great to be able to use the different leverage points for
you know. How do you oversee marketing on the management side versus on the publishing side? Like, is the team split up where it's like there's people who do just publishing, people who do just management, or is there more crossover? How does that work internally?
Yeah. No, we've tried it both ways. And we still kind of experiment with different things, but it really, at the end of the day, makes the most sense to treat it as one team. So a digital marketing person, you know, could be working a management artist and a publishing artist.
It's fluid.
It is very fluid. And it really helps from the leverage perspective, right? If the person who's handling Melissa Etheridge has this amazing opportunity that Melissa can't do, we can then, you know, convert it to one of our publishing clients.
Right. So it keeps it fluid, keeps it moving easy. What is the publishing book that you always, or I'm sorry, the marketing book? What is the marketing book that you always recommend to people? Do you have a favorite book that you always like to read or reference about on marketing? Even if it's not about marketing, but puts you in the right mindset.
There's not necessarily a book, but what I always say along these lines, and I'm sorry if I'm not answering your question specifically, and I may have even said this to you when we were at that round table, but any young person who's listening, if I could go back and speak to my 25-year-old me, go out and network as much as possible. And I know, obviously, take this year, you know, year plus out of it. Once everything opens back up, no matter how tired you feel, no matter how exhausted your day has been, you've got to force yourself not to go home and sit on that couch and veg out. You got to go out a couple, three, four nights a week, go see live music, go up to people, introduce yourself to them. I wish I had done more of that, but I was just so, you know, shy and nervous, you know, to take it to that level. But those who can overcome that and those who are great at that, there's far more opportunity for you.
That's why I started the podcast, to do this.
Fantastic. I mean, it's amazing that you do this. And by the way, I saw a couple of days ago, you'd spoke with Ken Davenport. Ken,
yes.
We brought him on as a consultant in the theater space.
Holy cow. Just,
again, to add another piece to our offerings, right? I mean, Smokey Robinson wants, Smokey wants a musical, or, you know, Devo wants a musical, or whoever. We now have that available. So Ken is our
that
guy.
That is so cool. And he just announced, I know he's doing the Neil Diamond musical, which was just announced in the New York Times. That is so cool. He's to me is one of the more, I'm very into that world also. And he's easily one of the most innovative producers right now that's around. I mean, he's brilliant.
We love him.
Great to see you. Stay well.
Zach, thanks, man.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Wow. Love that episode. Adam Lauenberg on the podcast. Primary Wave head of marketing. Great episode, actually. Really fun talking with him. Thanks for listening. The Zach Kuhn Show is mixed by Sam Heyman, and our theme music is by Justin Johnson. If you want more content from us, you can subscribe to our newsletter at NashvilleBriefing.com, or you can follow us on socials, everything at Nashville Briefing. That was a great episode. Man, I love that. But by the way, you know, we talked a lot about publishing in that episode, and if you're interested in some other episodes on publishing, we have a great episode with Ben Vaughn, the CEO of Warner Chappell. We also talked last season with Beth Laird, the head of Creative Nation, another amazing publishing company in Nashville. You know, we bring you some good content here on the Zach Kuhn Show because we care. We care about it. You know, there's a lot of care going around here on the Zach Kuhn Show. And let me tell you something else which you might not know. The Zach Kuhn Show is part of the American Songwriter Podcast Network. And we're proud to be part of it. We really are. And I mean, there's some great shows in this network that you should look into and check out. You know, there's a show, Surviving the Music Industry, which I listen to regularly because, you know, trying to make it through the music industry one day at a time. Okay, that's it. I'm getting too excited here. I gotta get out of here. I'm done for the week. We'll see you next time. Bye.